Welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast. In this podcast, we take a reading from Scripture each day. We look at the background material to that passage and also application for us. Once again, welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Illuminated Word Podcast. I'm David McLean. In our reading today, it's going to come from Daniel chapter 3, verses 8 through 25. Read, some Chaldeans took this occasion to come forward and maliciously accuse the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, may the king live forever. You, as king, have issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, drum, and every kind of music must fall down and worship the gold statue. Whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. Well, there are some Jews that you have appointed to manage the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men have ignored you, the king, and they do not serve your gods or worship the gold statue you've set up. Then in a furious rage, Nebuchadnezzar gave orders to bring in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar asked them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, is it true that you don't serve my gods or worship the gold statue I've set up? Now, if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, zither, lyre, harp, drum, and every kind of music, fall down and worship the statue I made. But if you don't worship it, you will be immediately thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. And who is the God who can rescue you from my power? Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer to this question. If the God we serve exists, then he can rescue us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he can rescue us from the power of you, the king. But even if he does not rescue us, we want you as king to know that we will not serve your gods or worship the gold statue you set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with rage, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He gave orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than was customary. And he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the furnace of blazing fire. So these men, in their trousers, robes, head coverings, and other clothes, were tied up and thrown into the furnace of blazing fire. Since the king's command was so urgent and the furnace extremely hot, the raging flames killed those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell, bound, into the furnace of blazing fire. Then King Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in alarm. He said to his visors, didn't we throw 3 men into the fire? Yes, your majesty, they replied to the king. He exclaimed, look, I see 4 men, not tied, walking around in the fire unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods. We're going to stop right there and just look at a few things just in this section here. Obviously, this story is one of the most famous stories, I do believe, that we've heard in church growing up. I think if you spend any amount of time in church, especially in Sunday school, you had to hear about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. But as Devin talked about yesterday, the gold statue being set up and Nebuchadnezzar demanding them to worship when they hear the music play, well, then we have this problem of these 3 are not bowing down and worshiping. These 3 have been put in a power of position. So these Chaldeans or these astrologers, they're upset. They're mad because these 3 Jews who are put in this position of power are not doing what the king has ordered. And so they go and they basically tattle on them. And we don't know if other Jews refused to fall down and worship the statue, but for some reason these 3 were singled out as public examples. Again, I think it's because they were Jews in power, in positions of power, and the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, they were out after them. But, you know, I've always wondered when I read this story, why didn't Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego just bow to the image and then, like, tell God they didn't mean it? They had every right. I mean, they probably could have came up with all kinds of arguments or justifications. They could have had the excuses that they were going to bow to the statue and save their lives. I mean, they could have had the excuse of, you know, we'll fall down but not actually worship the idol. We can make it look like we're worshiping but not really worship. You know, or they'll say we won't become idol worshipers but we'll worship it this one time and then ask God for forgiveness. You know, another excuse, it could have said that the king has absolute power and must obey him so God will understand. Or the king appointed us, we owe this to him. Or another excuse could be, this is a foreign land, so God will excuse us for following the customs, of the land. Or better yet, they could have went back in their history and said, our ancestors set up idols in God's temple. This isn't half as bad. Or the classic one that I hear from my kids, we're not hurting anybody. What does it matter? Or another excuse, if we got ourselves killed and some pagans take our high positions, they won't help our people in exile. They could have had all kinds of excuses. And those excuses sound sensible at first, but they're dangerous rationalizations. You see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had determined that they would never worship another god. And so they courageously took their stand. In our class on Wednesday night in the middle school, the rising class, we're talking about ethics. And how, when we come to making decisions, especially when it comes to ethical decisions, it's easy to rationalize and explain away sometimes. But we have to be careful, because we can rationalize a really bad decision and make it sound good. Their principle at the center of this was that they were not going to worship another god, so they took their stand. And as a result, they were condemned to be executed. The men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they didn't know whether they would be delivered from the fire. All they knew was that they would not fall down and worship an idol. So Nebuchadnezzar flies into a rage because they dared to disobey his commands. I mean, as the ruler of Babylon, he expected absolute obedience, but his pride had caused him to go, beyond his own authority. His demands were really unjust, and his reaction here is just extreme, to turn up seven times hotter. But back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were pressured into denying God, but they chose to be faithful to him no matter what happened. They trusted God to deliver them, but they were determined to be faithful regardless of the consequences. It was obvious to those watching, too, when they were thrown in, that something amazing happened, something miraculous was happening, that there was a fourth person in there, and they knew that it was supernatural. And so we can't be certain who the fourth man was. It could have been an angel. But I tend to think that when it refers to the angel of the Lord, or in this case, it says a son of the God, I tend to go with the belief that that is the the pre-incarnate Jesus. That is, and there's other places in the Old Testament where the angel of the Lord appears. The first one that comes to mind is wrestling with God. Jacob wrestling with God, and the fact that this could be the pre-incarnate Jesus that's come into the fire with them, to me, just makes it that much more special. But even if it was just an angel of the Lord, either way, they knew that something supernatural was happening there. And back up a minute to their response to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar comes, and he's threatening them. He becomes angry. He orders it hotter, Well, before that, he wants them to bow, and he gives them a second chance. Come on, let's bow. And then he makes this statement, who is the God who can rescue from my power? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, if the God we serve exists, then he will rescue us, or he can rescue us from the furnace of blazing fire. But even if he does not rescue us. And that phrase right there, it wasn't just till a few years ago where I really, saw this phrase and really honed in on this phrase. Even if he does not rescue us, this idea that God, this idea that they stood up to the king, they stood firmly, but they also admitted that things may not go their way, but they still were not going to worship God or worship Nebuchadnezzar. They were not going to bow down to this golden statue. The faith they had, the faith that was displayed, from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, really just blows me away. When I am praying to God, or when I come to God with something, I don't even like to have the idea that this might not go my way. I don't even want to give God the idea that he could, answer this in a way that I don't want to. There's been a lot of things in my life that's happened, especially, I think I've shared the story before, at least when I've preached about, Grayson, our middle child, being born premature and spending so much time in the NICU. I never once wanted the idea to cross my mind. And when people would come and tell me, well, it may not be God's will for her to be healed, I don't want to hear that. I don't even want that to be an option. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to stand here in front of the king and say, oh, our God will rescue us. But even if he doesn't, it's like, wait, what? Do you realize what's waiting for you if he doesn't rescue? Do you realize what's going to happen here? Really what they're telling Nebuchadnezzar is there's nothing you can say. There's nothing you can do that's going to make us go against the principles of our faith. And that principle is not bowing down and worshiping an idol. You know, idolatry in the broad sense of putting secondary things in the place of absolute commitment that only God should be given really is a constant temptation, if we're honest. Whether it's wealth or power, security, good health, or secular ideologies, there's many things that have become such idols for us as individuals, even for whole societies. You know, we may actually face a more pervasive and more subtle form of it in our culture. It's been said to our culture is obsessed with image, that people are concerned about their image in a new way. They are attracted by the image of something or someone rather than to the substance. The result can be really dehumanizing, and people cease to be full human beings and can become models on display. So even the idea of image, maybe it's not a golden image, but we can get wrapped up in worshiping an image becoming idolatry. That'd be our own image, or the image of something, of some idea of perfection that we have, whether it's, you know, in our spouses or, you know, in our jobs or whatever it may be. You know, in chapter 1 of Daniel, we really see that the problem does not arise because of malice towards Jews. From one point of view, the king's offer of an education to groom the exiles for a job in the Babylonian court and food from his table is quite generous. You know, we see here, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, Daniel and the Jewish young men are faced in chapter 1 of giving in and doing things Nebuchadnezzar's way, conforming to the society there, conforming to the culture. I mean, he's giving the exiles from a conquered nation a great opportunity to share in the privileged lifestyle of their conquerors. And see, Daniel recognizes that the danger inherent in the temptation to assimilate to this pagan way of life, and so he refuses this. The problem arises from his own conscience, and then the pagan officials who become involved are actually generous towards him. It really never becomes a public scandal. You know, that chapter centers on the internal, personal struggle to remain true to one's convictions and commitments when it would be much easier to go with the crowd. You get to chapter 3, and Nebuchadnezzar's call for worship of his image is not like anti-Jewish motives, but he does call for a public act by all of his senior officials, and you know, that way, that there, if there's any dissenters, it'll become obvious. And I think that might be intentional on the king's part. But in this case, unlike chapter 1, the Jews do find themselves faced with malicious opponents. And their accusers seem motivated by a professional jealousy, as I talked about a few minutes ago. Something to notice in chapter 3. Sorry if I'm kind of bouncing around here, just kind of sharing some ideas. I feel like that everything that could be said about the fiery furnace has probably already been said. Definitely has already been said throughout at least my time in church. One thing I want to point out about the fiery furnace is that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not saved from the fiery furnace, but they are kept safe in the fiery furnace. And I think the original Jewish hearers and readers of this story would have very well seen it as a metaphorical meaning. You know, the Egyptian captivity is likened to a quote, iron furnace in their traditions. Isaiah 48:10 describes the experience of exile in Babylon as the furnace of affliction. So Jews experiencing any form of exile with its trials that come with it could identify with the story. But God had promised to be with them in their affliction. If we read Isaiah 43:2, it says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. And when you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you." The reality is that these three men were not saved from the fire, but they were protected in the fire. And so the promise of the strengthening presence of God in times of trial, rather than really any promise of miraculous deliverance from them, that's given hope to persecuted believers throughout history. The story is not so much a story about the young men's heroism as about the as it is about the effect of their heroism on those around them, especially on the king. As we'll see tomorrow, when I think Chris is doing it, the podcast tomorrow, Nebuchadnezzar's moved as much by the fact that they gave up their bodies as by the fact that they were rescued. And so, you know, it's very easy for us to read this story and try to see ourselves as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And if we're going to do that, then we have to realize that they were not saved from the fire. They were kept safe in the fire. They were never promised to be saved from trials, to be kept from things that will test us to have an easy life. But God has promised to walk through it with us, to walk through those moments with us, to be there with us every step of the way. And also to notice the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they did not bend on their principles. They did not, they didn't compromise. You know, they didn't come up with an excuse and rationalize away the choices they made. But instead they said, no, we worship only God. No other gods before Yahweh. We worship only Yahweh, and that's what we're going to do. And so we have to stand on our principles. We can't compromise. We can't rationalize not doing the right thing. And I feel like the last year or so, there's been a lot of compromising, a lot of rationalizing of why we won't do certain things, why we won't speak about certain injustices or speak out or stand up. But folks, that can't be who we are. We can't be scared of the fire. We can't do everything we can to avoid the fire. But instead, we have to stand up and know that when we are faced with the fire, that even if we're tossed in, that God is there with us. And that that we'll be okay. That everything will be all right. I hope this was a blessing in some form or fashion. Like I said, I know I was kind of all over the place there. I jotted down some notes and went back and saw what I skipped. So, you know, oh well. Maybe you got something out of it. I know that I enjoy going back and reading this story every once in a while. So I hope you are blessed. And I also hope that you are seeking ways to be a blessing to others around you. So have a blessed week, and we'll see you next time.